One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, well, campers. Welcome back to Camp Duskwood. It's a fine, still night here by Twilight Lake. The kind where stories just seem to crawl right out of the woods and into your bones. I'm Otis Gyrie, and I'm mighty glad to have you here again. Let's see who's braving the fire tonight. Janice. Back for the fourth week now. Either you're braver than most, or you just like scaring yourself silly. Ryan, good to see you again, too. And look who you brought along. Kenny, was it? Good to see you back. And who's this new face? Samantha, is it? Well, Samantha, welcome to our little gathering. Hope you don't spook too easy, because tonight's tales, well, they've got a little something extra. Isn't that right, Janice? Remember last week's story about Darren? That boy sure had a way of sticking with you, much like the people in tonight's tales. They've been caught in situations that stick with you long after the campfire burns out. Tonight, I've got two stories for you. One about a man trapped by the dark bargains of his own making, and another about the desperate fight for freedom under the Big Top. They'll make you wonder just how much a person can endure before breaking. And so, pull your blankets tighter, campers. It's time to begin. Our first story takes us to a circus, a place of wonder for some, but a cage for others. This is the story of a man who learned the hard way that some promises can never be broken, no matter the cost. Here's Secrets of the Seven Symphonies Circus by Shanoa Carol Brad. The world's fattest man awoke in a dark corner of a rattling train car, smelling straw, rust, and rot. An elongated box was against the opposite wall, draped in a tarpaulin, lit by flickers of passing light from the cracks around the door. There was one like it in each of the boxcars, shrouded from the sunlight. Dr. Madness, the ringmaster, he never put all his eggs in one basket. He was far too wily a bastard for that. The world's fattest man shifted, feeling sweat pool among his many rolls. He had no way of knowing which one of Madness's helpers was in the coffin, but the fact that it was in there with him at all made his skin crawl. He stretched as much as he could, feeling the press of humidity in the boxcar. He wondered what new mark they were streaming toward this time. Madness never let him go in the advance party, arriving a day ahead of the circus to spread flyers and drum up interest. Madness sent younger boys and Serene, the snake dancer. Serene always drew them in. He imagined her parading down the street in her spangly outfit, one of her boas asleep on her shoulders. The world's fattest man was too cumbersome, too inconvenient to ever go on ahead. He had to be hauled in and out of the boxcar with a series of platforms and pulleys like a wounded elephant. "Crawl, elephant boy," the others teased. "Show us your little trunk." He shook his head. It hadn't always been like this. Madness made him into a freak. The world's fattest man had a name once. Alfre Noker. Back in 1910, before he joined the Seven Symphonies Circus. He'd been 16 and husky. His life at the time had seemed limited. Go to college and try to find a career, or follow in his father's footsteps and learn household carpentry. Neither option had appealed to him. He thought he'd be happier if he could just cut ties to his former life altogether. The Seven Symphonies Circus had come through the neighboring town of Drayville, and he'd gotten it in his head that he was meant for a life on the road. He read Leaves of Grass 3 times and thought that maybe he could travel the world writing poetry and sipping from Lady Luck's cup. After the show, he had approached the circus owner, Dr. Thaddeus Madness, with his hat in hand, sweat on his still hairless lip. As Alfre walked up to the ringmaster, Madness' face had changed, his broad lips breaking into a grin that showed every tooth. That close, Alfre had been able to see cracks and streaks in Madness' makeup, the ravages of sweat and time. "My boy," Madness said, clapping his shoulder. "Enjoyed the show, did you?" Yes, sir, Alfre muttered. "Good, good. Be sure to tell your friends." He paused then and seemed to look Alfre over. Alfre hadn't met his eyes but for a half a second at a time. "Oh, my," the ringmaster had said. "I know that face. Yes, I do. Don't have many friends, do you?" Alfre had shaken his head. "No, sir." "Well, we can't have everything, can we, son?" Madness had leaned back and glared at him. "What can I do for you?" Alfre had crumpled his hat in his hand, unable to release it.
"Well, sir, I was hoping I could hire on with you for a spell. I know the sums and cooking, and I can do hard labor."
Madness had given him a skeptical look. "I know I don't look it, but I'm as hard a worker as you'll ever find."
"How old are you, boy?"
18, sir."
Madness had grinned at that, and Alfre worried if it had been because his voice had quavered on the lie. The ringmaster looked around the big top, and his smile had faded as he watched his workers progress.
"I can always use a hard worker," he grumbled.
That was back before Madness had acquired his helpers, when setting up and striking the circus fell to human hands. Alfre glanced across the boxcar to the covered coffin once more. He didn't know where the helpers had come from, but being so close made him sick. Shuddered. It was probably his imagination, but he could smell its contents baking in the stifling heat. Madness had not asked any more questions that first night, which was a little disappointing because Alfre had prepared a whole story about how he was an orphan and no one would miss him. Instead, Madness had clapped him on the back and told him to report to Greenlee, a tall man in a slouchy gray hat. Madness had declared that night was a trial run and said that if Alfre did a good job, they would discuss permanent employment. That had been the best night of Alfrey's life. He'd sweated, broke brand new calluses on his palms, and had felt all the while like he had made it into the ranks of the illustrious and magic people. He was happy. When the Seven Seas Symphony Circus left town 3 days later, Alfrey went with them. Madness fed him well and provided him with a bunk. He assigned Alfrey to help Greenlee with whatever was needed. But Alfrey had caught Madness watching him sometimes, looking at him like a butcher would a hog. After learning what he could from Greenlee, he'd been assigned to study under Magno, the strong man. Alfrey had eaten the same things as Magno, a dozen raw eggs, steak, rolls, mashed potatoes, several helpings of everything. Magno had lifted weights and exercised all day, but Alfrey didn't. Alfrey had just gotten fat. When he brought that up to Madness, the ringmaster had eyed him and nodded. "You do seem to have gained some weight," Madness had said. "Maybe strongman understudy isn't the best fit for you." A few days later, Madness had approached Alfrey. "One of the freaks is sick," he had said. "Can you fill in for a few hours?" Alfrey had been appalled, but he agreed. In hindsight, he wished he'd asked which freak. Madness and Greenlee had taken off Alfrey's shirt and pants, then puffed gray powder on his skin, and hooked a long fake nose onto his face. "Your backstory is the Elephant Boy," Madness told him. "Abandoned as a child, you were raised in the wilds of Africa by a herd of elephants. Don't speak. Don't get up off your hands and knees. You can trumpet if you want. Let me hear your trumpet." Alfrey had tried his best, but Madness winced. "No trumpeting. Just tromp around in circles and eat some peanuts." "What peanuts?" "The ones folks'll throw," Greenlee had said. Alfrey looked pleadingly to Madness. "Sir?" Madness waved a hand, dismissing any further talk. "Pretend you're an elephant. Make it fun." They dragged him to the Elephant Boy's booth. "But no hands. Elephants don't have hands." Alfrey dropped to his knees, wondering what his mother would say if she saw him there, crawling through the straw like an animal.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Staring at the coffin, Alfrey thought of his mother. He hadn't seen or heard from her since he'd signed up, and didn't even know if she was still alive. The past 10 years had dragged on, and Alfrey was tired. Tired of eating, tired of the stares, the mocking crowd, the disgusted noises women made under their breaths as they passed his stall. Alfrey didn't speak much anymore, and people rarely spoke to him, rendering his tongue out of practice. After he reached a certain size, people stopped seeing him as anything other than a breathing collection of rolls and bulges. They seemed to forget he had ears, and as a result, he'd learned so much over the last decade. He was fed up with the secrets, the lies, and the death. Alfrey made up his mind. He began rocking back and forth, trying to tip himself over. He succeeded, with a sound like a giant pancake being flipped on a hot griddle. The coffin sat only 4 feet away, and he started to crawl. After his first night as the elephant boy, Madness had raised his pay. He'd sworn that Alfrey was the best he'd ever seen. But if he wanted to be truly great, he would need to put on more mass. Alfrey occasionally wondered if his life would have turned out differently if he'd just said no. But he didn't say no. And Madness had assigned him weekly weight quotas to reach. He was restricted from any unnecessary movement. At first it had been relaxing, like a paid vacation. But crawling around on his knees, carrying all that weight, had soon become painful. His knees grew swollen and red until Madness had stopped dusting him in grape powder and finally canceled the elephant boy. Soon after, Greenlee had given Alfrey a chair. "Don't stop eating," Madness had said. "You'll be our biggest attraction." And just like that, Alfrey became the great monstrosity, the world's fattest man. Alfrey struggled forward, his flabby stomach dragging along the dirty, straw-covered bottom of the boxcar. He was coated in a sheen of sweat. His chest hurt, but he continued crawling forward an inch at a time, dragging himself by his huge, heavy arms, his legs trailing behind, just extra ballast. For a while, Alfrey had been able to get around on a pair of heavy crutches. Madness scolded him, claiming he was doing harm and that he should let his legs rest. Alfrey didn't listen. He had enjoyed whatever slivers of freedom he could find. At one town stop, Magnus had brought a physician in to perform a yearly physical exam on all the talent and crew. The doctor's breath reeked of gin. He had started with Alfrey's reflexes and then weighed him. Alfrey must have been asleep because the next thing he remembered was waking up to find the doctor gone. The backs of his ankles ached, and he had grown too fat to see or reach them. Madness told him the doctor's orders were to stay off his feet for at least a month, otherwise it might result in permanent damage. He wouldn't say exactly what the doctor had done. Alfred's weight had swelled in the following weeks. His ankles itched and ached, driving him mad because he couldn't scratch them. When the time had finally come for Alfrey to walk again, he'd fallen over immediately upon standing. He'd called for help, and Madness came. The ringmaster had shaken his head sadly. "You shouldn't have pushed yourself," he had said. "Now look what you've done." Alfrey had dreamed that if he'd just rested his legs long enough, they'd recover, and he'd be able to walk away from the Seven Symphonies Circus. But deep down, he had known the truth. Madness would never let him leave. Madness had crippled him. Alfrey inched closer and closer. His hand landed on the tarpaulin and pulled it away, revealing a coffin of dark, polished wood, carved and inscribed in a language he couldn't read. Once he was next to it, Alfrey definitely smelled the corruption of the thing inside. It hadn't been his imagination. He slabbed a flabby wing of an arm over the casket's lid and began the laborious crawl toward the boxcar door. Madness's helpers were one of the circus's many ugly secrets. Alfrey knew how they went out into town whenever the circus stopped and preyed upon those who didn't come to see the show. Madness told them not to harm patrons, but the rest were fair game. He believed it was a small price for a circus ticket, a small price to save their lives. The casket was heavier than he had expected, and Alfrey's progress slowed down even more as he oozed across the boxcar floor. The way his heart fought in his chest, and as hard as it was to breathe, he didn't think he had much longer left. For a while, madness used to bring him hired girls as a reward for a year's work well done. If sitting in a chair and stuffing his face while strangers sneered could have been considered work. He hadn't brought Alfrey a girl in 3 years, not since he'd accidentally smothered one. He wondered if her family ever learned the truth of what had happened to her, or if one day the girl's mother had woken up with a hole in her life. Most likely no one had learned of her demise. Madness's helpers probably saw to that. There was a popular snack booth by Serene's tent, and he could always smell it from his chair, the aromas of roasting meat and spices forever teasing his nose. The booth's painted sign had read, "Exotic Morsels from the Mysterious East," and he had often seen patrons wander by with skewers of spiced browned meat. Camel, the signs had claimed, but Alfrey had never seen a live camel near the circus, let alone a cleaned and butchered one. When patrons had asked how the meat could be so fresh, they'd been told it was owed to a secret preservation technique known only in the Orient and taught only to a dozen chefs a decade. Andre had seen the helpers come stalking back through the fairgrounds after a kill, flushed with life. He had known not to get close or ask any questions. They'd paid him no mind, but he'd overheard them speak of the Angel. The Angel's shows had all been in the Big Top, where Alfrey hadn't been allowed. But he'd seen patrons exit with tears on their cheeks, smiling and laughing as if they were drunk. Alfrey wished he could see the Angel perform. He'd have liked that almost as much as being able to walk again. Alfrey reached the door and collapsed, his sweaty face pressed to the boxcar's filthy floor, his breath wheezing. He lay there for nearly 15 minutes, trying to regain his strength. His heart pounded against his ribcage so hard that he thought it might burst. At last he pulled himself up and flipped the latch on the door. Once the top opened, he collapsed like a cresting wave of fat. Despite everything, Alfrey had understood his place at the circus. He hadn't been so hopelessly naive. Madness had explained people flocked to his shows for 2 reasons, and 2 reasons only. The light. They came to see something amazing, something awe-worthy, something they'd ever, never be able to do, something that filled them with wonder and hope and made them feel alive. That was Serene's job. That was the Angel's dominion. And there was the dark. The ugly, disgusting. The place where the misfortune provided something hideous for the patrons to gawk at. The patrons wanted to feel superior. They wanted their little lives to look better by comparison to the disfigured, deformed, and wrong. Alfrey had provided that service, faithfully and without complaint, for years. But no longer. Resting on his enormous stomach, Alfrey pried the boxcar door open an inch. The wind whistled, blowing cool air on his face. He smiled. His suffering was not for nothing. He pried the door open a little more, then gripped the edge and pulled the creaking wood fully open, taking comfort in the knowledge that his soul would persist, unlike Madness' poor damned helpers. The wind roared and sucked at him. The dry fields passed in a yellow blur. Alfrey slapped one huge arm on the casket once more, making a sound like a slaughtered animal dropping to the floor. Something moved inside the coffin and frantically scratched and pounded against the lid. Alfrey took a deep, labored breath, then shoved the coffin out. It disappeared into the air, whipping out of sight. Alfrey heard the crack of wood exploding into splinters on impact, and a horrible, inhuman screeching. His madness helper was suddenly forced into the strong summertime sunshine. Madness would hear it. Madness would know. Alfrey dragged himself to the edge of the door. The train's brakes squealed. He gripped the floor edge, then heaved himself out. He tumbled onto the weedy ground, feeling the gravel bite into his flesh, chewing him apart. He rolled down the embankment, the world going blurry. He'd done it. He was finally free. Alfrey came to rest in a little culvert, where dirty water trickled around his swollen feet, and patches of wild mustard and black-eyed Susans bloomed. Pain burned throughout his body. Wide gashes seeped blood through pockets of erupted fat. His ankles and knees had taken the worst, and, he didn't possess the strength to move another inch. The train's brakes ceased squealing at last. Alfrey closed his eyes and sighed. The breeze was nice. The air was warm, but not too hot. Not suffocating like it had been in the boxcar. He heard shouting, swearing, the trample of feet. Madness was coming. Madness would kill him for what he had done. But for right then, Alfrey was happy. He may not have walked away, but he'd managed to quit the Seven Symphonies Circus after all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, campers, what'd I tell you? Alfrey may have crawled his way to freedom, but not without leaving a piece of himself behind. And maybe more than just his flesh. Makes you wonder what kind of bargains Dr. Madness made to keep that circus running, doesn't it? So, Kenny, how'd you feel about that one? Think you'd have the guts to face down a coffin full of, well, let's call it bad news. And Samantha, you're new here. But if you were Alfrey, would you have stayed in that boxcar? Or made a break for it like he did? Yeah, it's easy to say when it's not your skin on the line, huh? Now, let's shift gears. Our next tale features a man who thought he could fool the dead and found out, too late, that they weren't the ones to be fooled. This one's called The Fall of Silas Galloway, written by Dan Weatherer. If you thought the circus was grim, well, you hear what happens when the spirits fight back. Silas Galloway had everything a man could want. Wealth, power, and a silver tongue sharp enough to part fools from their fortunes. But when you live your life as a lie, it's only a matter of time before the truth comes clawing back. Here's The Fall of Silas Galloway. Silas Galloway had found life thus far most rewarding. His work had provided more than plenty to fund his increasingly lavish tastes and extravagant lifestyle. A modest yet exquisitely furnished country manor, set deep within the rolling hills of Somerset, was now his to call home, and provided the ideal backdrop to host his latest business ventures, those aimed specifically at the wealthier tiers of society. Money, however, was no longer the prime motivator to Silas, long since surpassed by the craving for the intoxicating scent of reverence he now seemed to generate with relative ease wherever he so performed. The bulk of his clientele, grief-stricken by recent loss and blessed with deep pockets, had already elevated him to a prophet-like stature. In their eyes, he held all of the keys and, more importantly, all of the answers. The payments of a few sovereigns or silver trinkets were of little concern when you were once again in contact with the deceased. Silas Galloway was, however, a fraud. His ability to commune with the spirit world was a mere parlor trick. He could no more speak to the dead than he could walk on water. The idea had stuck him in earnest one winter morning long before he found his fortunes. Walking familiar streets, stomach empty, the previous night's cold still chilling his bones, he happened upon a funeral procession. The widow, attired in black and overcome with emotion, collapsed in a sudden faint directly at his feet. Clumsily, he gathered her up and began to slap her face gently in order to arouse her. By this time, the funeral party had drawn to a halt and gasped in horror at the apparent assault taking place upon Lady Barrow. Let it be known, by the way, none rushed to her aid. Wearily, she opened her eyes. Silas could see reason and a sense of duty quickly flood her face, and she climbed unsteadily to her feet. I'm dreadfully sorry. She paused, searching carefully for her next words. Sir, I'm quite out of sorts today, for my husband was taken from us not 3 nights since. Tears began to well in her eyes, and she trembled as grief took its all-too-familiar hold once more. Your husband was truly a great man, for all these great and noble folk to come and show their respect, Silas said, motioning toward the gathering mourners. However, my lady, I believe, although he has passed from this mortal plane, he will continue to watch over you for the rest of your days. Surprised at his words, for he was unsure as to why he had found words of comfort so forthcoming, Silas blushed and nodded a farewell to Lady Barrow. A gentle smile flashed across her lips, and she reached for his hand, leaving a gold sovereign upon his upturned palm. "For your kind words," she whispered, and with that she turned to retake her place behind her husband's coffin. A whip cracked the air a twain, and the horses resumed their deliberate trot toward the cemetery that was located on the outskirts of town. Slowly, the idea of trading kind words for payment began to take shape, and over time he honed his reading technique of groups and or individuals into a fine art. With some basic communication techniques and a warm manner, he had become one of the region's finest and most respected mediums in a relatively short amount of time. What had started out as a gesture of kindness, however, was quickly replaced by the necessity to lie and cheat as much wealth as possible as his taste for the elegant began to take a firm hold. Lady Martha Appleby and her daughter, Marcy, accompanied by Sir Henry Lloyd, were due to arrive shortly. Silas had discussed at length the possibility of using one of the so-called talking boards that were becoming popular with mediums and spiritualists over in the United States, and the lady seemed very receptive to the idea. It was with great personal expense that Silas had procured himself one of the first Ouija boards that had entered Great Britain, and here it lay positioned in the center of the grand oak table that dominated the drawing room. Each letter, elegantly styled in the color of a starless night, the planchette set aside, awaiting the touch of the inquisitive natured. A scattered candlelight completed the scene, allowing enough illumination over the table, but shrouding the remainder of the room in an uneven darkness. There was a developing storm somewhere off to the south, which would further add to the ambiance of the evening. A sizable amount of gold was already promised to Silas, and he was confident the scene was set for a performance that would likely produce further riches from his soon-to-be-impressed visitors. The wine had grown warm, and the polite small talk and false bravado had long since passed. An expectant hush had befallen the drawing room as all eyes turned toward the small wooden board. Each placed a finger onto the planchette, eagerly awaiting the bridge of communication to be established. "Are there any spirit persons among us who wish to make themselves known?" asked Silas aloud. A deafening silence. "Ask again, please," requested Lady Appleby, shifting in her seat excitedly. "Is there anyone with us here now that wishes to communicate? Please step forwards," Silas asked again. The sound of wood moving on wood. All eyes watched as the small planchette edged its way toward yes. Lady Appleby clapped. "He is doing that, are you not?" demanding Sir Henry. Silas swallowed hard, for he was not exerting any notable pressure upon the object. Indeed, it had been his plan to only move the object himself on the third time of asking, thus building the suspense further. No, he replied. "'Tis the, He paused, his usual veneer of complete mastery of the situation, failing him somewhat. "It is an as-yet-nameless spirit," he assured them. Sir Henry looked little in the way of convinced. Silas continued. "Are you male or female?" The planchette made its way toward the number six. Those gathered exchanged a puzzled look, as still the planchette moved toward the number one, and then returned once again to six. 616? What on earth kind of answer is that?" asked Miss Marcy. "I am most confused." All eyes locked on Silas. "Well, my lady, one can only assume our initial question is rather frivolous to this particular spirit. I suggest we continue in order to gather as much information as we possibly can." Sir Henry scoffed dismissively and was met swiftly with a disapproving look from Lady Appleby. Sweating now and with a genuine excitement building within him, Silas' mind raced. For years he had led his clients along a merry dance, filling their heads and their hearts with what the silent spirits had so denied him. They had lapped it up, and he had felt little in the way of remorse for taking their coin deceitfully, for they all returned home happy. Silas, happiest of all. "Do you have a message for us, O Spirit?" he continued, adding a little of his dramatic flair to the proceedings. Again, the planchette followed the familiar pattern of crossing 6, 1, and 6. Sir Henry pulled his hand away angrily. "Pah! 'Tis a lie! He plays us for fools, in the hopes of keeping us here long into the night. The hunger for coin grows in you, does it not?" The ladies removed their fingers abruptly, leaving a bewildered Silas touching the now motionless wooden board. "By God, no, of course not," he exclaimed loudly. "I have merely opened the gates of communication to the other side. It is not I who decides what the spirits have to say." "Then prove it for us, kind sir," mocked Sir Henry. "Ask the next question, without the touch of any of use upon that blasted thing. If it moves, I'll pay for the whole charade myself twice over." Ordinarily, this would mean that his bluff had been well and truly called. However, he knew he was not the one dictating the movement of the planchette. And he was fairly confident that neither were any of his guests. Ignoring the feeling of unease that had begun to creep into his belly, he decided to take Sir Henry up on his boast. 6-1-6 means nothing to us here, Spirit. Do you have anything useful to tell? Silas asked, his eyes meeting Sir Henry's stare. The planchette began to rotate on the spot, gathering speed with each revolution, until a faint whistle could be heard emanating from the center of the board.
"Oh, my!"
shrieked one of the ladies. Silas could not be sure whom, as his attention was fixed on the blur of motion before him. The whistle increased in volume and pitch until it was barely audible, more a painful sensation that drilled its way into the skull. Miss Macy was crying, and Lady Appleby was mouthing something incoherent. Sir Henry merely sat transfixed, eyes locked on the chaos unfurling on the table. There was a loud crack, and he spilled backward from his chair, the whirling tool now gone. A scream of pain broke the silence, and Marcy backed away from Sir Henry as he staggered back to his feet. The left side of his face, a mass of blood, wood, and gore, the missing planchette embedded in his eye socket. Raging, he tore the planchette from his eye with a sickening squelch, grabbed the wooden board and broke it across his knee. "God damn you, Silas, and your parlor tricks! I will see you pay for this!" he hissed. Clutching his face and taking a weeping Lady Appleby by the arm, he turned his back to Silas.
"I'm sorry,"
offered Silas, but the dark had already taken them from sight, and it was left with a splintered board and the bloody wooden pointer.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The days that followed were filled with an air of unease and anxiousness for Silas. The nights even more so, for although the seance occupied a particularly dark page within his past, past it was indeed. Yet something lingered in the air still, something born unto the mortal realm that night, and here it dwell alongside Silas, pulling at the periphery of his consciousness and teasing his senses to amuse its cruel leanings. The air in the house hung heavy with dread. Food quickly spoiled, plant life wilted in a matter of hours, and guests began to frequent the house less. Yet Silas, with a mental strength hitherto unknown, pushed these strange occurrences to the back of his mind. When questioned about the strong odor of sulfur that permeated the property, he pointed to poor sanitation and heavy rainfall as the leading cause. When the incessant scratching sounds were queried, he laid the blame at the particularly severe infestation of rats. Harder to explain still was the reoccurring 616 that appeared etched into furniture, daubed on walls in an unfamiliar ink, and lay cut, but hidden from view, into Silas's own flesh. As day blurred into night, and the weeks began to pass with no sign of the unusual activity abating, Silas became increasingly frail. Sleep seldom granted him reprieve, as his dreams were haunted by the screams of the damned. Visions of hellish creatures spawned from the pits of Hades scrabbled toward the naked frame night after restless night. Sunlight offered little retreat also. Increasingly, desperate whispers in unknown tongues filled his head. Several voices all clamored for his attention, yet all he could make sense of was those damn numbers. For a man previously so stout in his belief that the afterlife was a myth, and as good as a reason as any to make a profit from, his personal life had become a terrifying case study in the existence of evil beyond the mortal plane, and his sanity hung by mere threads. An associate, by the name of Joseph White, had requested a small public demonstration of his skills as a way to integrate him back into polite society and away from the confines of the increasingly dilapidated house. However, seeing Silas in such a fragile state of mind, he deemed it necessary for his mental health to climb back onto the horse that had so violently thrown him off. The last turnpike had served the residents of Beechwood since the late 1700s, and on this rain-soddened night most of the village had congregated in the vast cellar for the highly anticipated public return of one of their most famous sons. Silas feebly picked his way through the gathered throng, making his way toward the piled wooden crates that doubled tonight as a makeshift stage. The air hung with the smell of wet clothes and stale beer, and an expectant hush fell upon the crowd as Silas took his place before them. "Thank you, one and all, for sharing the spirits with me tonight," he said aloud, a slight waver in his voice. A few appreciative nods from the crowd. "Indeed, it's been too long since I last communed with the deceased. He paused, not sure how to explain the terrors that enforced his absence, feeling an unseen breath, cold and rank on the back of his neck. He flinched, startling a few closest to him. There was a noticeable darkening within the cellar, and some shuffled nervously as Silas continued. "Lest we forget mind," a new found strength in his words, as he felt expectant eyes upon him, "that we, the living, have ultimate mastery over the dead." The sound of tearing cotton came suddenly from the stage as Silas let out a piercing cry and fell forward onto his knees. Strips of red darkened back, seeping from three distinct lines into one sopping blotch of scarlet. Another yelp as the shirts torn open, strips of flesh hanging in a red mist before falling wetly across his freshly lacerated back. The patrons, having overcome their initial shock at witnessing the apparent mutilation, began to flee the cellar as Silas' back became a canvas of red, worked upon by unseen claws. Mustering what little resolve remained, he picked himself up and stumbled to the stone floor, the remaining onlookers backing away hurriedly as he pushed and bloodied his way up the stairs and out into the unforgiving night's rainfall. Joseph White had remained within the cellar. Frozen with a mixture of both fear and intrigue, he had witnessed the spectral attack in its entirety, his eyes fixed on the thin strips of bloodied flesh that sat glistening atop of the crates. Pushing the disbelief of the last few minutes aside, he hurried his way out of the now deserted cavern. Clearly Silas was hurt and in need of a doctor. Although the rain lashed heavily at the cobbles, Joseph was able to make out the trail of blood that led to the barber's quarters further along the street. The door was ajar, broken and bloodstained, a scream of anguish far back within the darkness of the building. Joseph raised his lamp and moved into the gloom of the barber shop. Another cry from further within the shop, one of the back rooms. Rows of razors and scissors glimmered in the lamplight as he made his way deeper inside. Something wet and rubbery caught on his heel. He instinctively reached down and peeled it off of his shoe. "Joe, stay the hell away from me!" screamed a voice tainted with madness, followed breathlessly by a cry of suffering that rattled Joseph to his very core. The lamp illuminated a cowering Silas, a razor in hand halfway through the cartilage of his left ear. The right side of his face was gushing like a mask of red. "I can still hear them! Make them stop! Make them stop! Make them stop!" He wept as he continued sawing through his ear. The still warm ear in Joe's hand fell to the floor. Silas' tear-filled eyes were ablaze as he held the freshly removed body part up to the light, and he was grinning pathetically. "I can still hear them," he said in a soft voice. Dr. Rathers was proud of his patients. He believed the quality of mental distress his beloved Arlington Asylum housed elevated his practice from a mere hospital for the mentally disturbed into a pioneering center of research into some of the most troubled minds ever assembled. His interest was heightened today at the news of the arrival of a new patient demonstrating signs of demonic possession, according to witnesses at his apprehension. Nonsense, of course, but another prized research subject nevertheless, and one he was eager to get his metaphorical teeth into. His cell lay on the deepest floor of the Institute, a necessity for some of the more vocal of patients. "This is Mr. Galloway," confirmed one of the burly orderlies assigned to this particular floor. "You may want to be careful with this one," he offered, unbolting the thick iron door. Silas sat curled into a tight ball in the corner of his cell, frantically chewing his wrist. A small pool of blood had already formed at his side, and he rocked back and forth, eyes fixed on Dr. Rathers. The walls were coated with excrement, 616 daubed onto every free space of the dull gray brickwork. The smell of feces and copper hung heavily in the air. Dr. Rathers looked annoyed. "Treat his wounds and restrain him. I recommend heavy sedation. If I deem him as unfit for study, as I suspect he may well be, we'll arrange for a lobotomization." The orderly nodded. Silas continued to suckle greedily at his wrist, his eyes empty, but his head a ringing chorus of the demand. "What'd I say, campers? Silas thought he could fake his way to the top, but the spirits had other plans. And that number, 616, I'll bet it'll stick in your mind for a while. Maybe show up where you least expect it. Janice, you're our seasoned camper. What's your take? Better to face the darkness head on? Or keep lying to yourself like Silas did?" "Good answer. Always smart to tread carefully when the spirits get involved. And you two. Did either of those stories make you second-guess your choices? Maybe reconsider the Ouija board you've been thinking about pulling out. Well, campers, that's all for tonight. Thanks for keeping me company by the fire, Janice, Brian, Kenny, and Samantha. Don't forget to bring a friend along next week. There's always room here at Camp Duskwood. And remember, you never know what might be watching or waiting in the shadows."
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.